Hi, Podheads. I'm Kylie Colwell.
This is Kate Carter.
And I'm Holly Spear.
And the story I have for you guys today is probably the most chaotic case I've covered thus far. I heard about this years ago, but was recently reminded of it because there was a big update. Before we get to that, though, I need to give a big disclaimer. So, the accused perpetrator this story revolves around is very litigious. So, ladies, we need to watch our words. And remember that everyone is innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. And this is all opinion, allegedly.
Okay.
Well, not a sewer.
I'll do my best.
Although everything on here is usually
Yeah.
opinion.
But this is the ongoing story of the Solomon family. The Solomon family is comprised of dad Aaron, mom Angie, their son Grant, and daughter Gracie. And they're a well-connected family in Franklin, Tennessee, which is a wealthy suburb of Nashville. Angie is a pharmacist and I have to say a very strong woman. She grew up in an abusive home, went off to school, and got her doctorate in pharmacy. She had her dream job, was able to take care of herself, and buy her own home pretty soon after graduating. Her life would flip over in 2001 when she reconnected with Aaron Solomon, an old friend from high school, who is now a morning anchor on the local news station. Pretty soon after reconnecting, like within a few weeks, Angie found out she was pregnant. And this is the South, and both of their families are pretty religious, so that came with pressure. And Angie was basically forced to marry Aaron by both him and her parents only 6 weeks after they officially began dating. The newlywed couple welcomed their son Grant on June 13th, 2002, and their daughter Gracie was later born in 2006. But allegedly, Aaron was physically and mentally abusive to everyone in the house from the get-go. Like I said, for legality purpose, this is all alleged. But allegedly, Aaron controlled everything in the home. He told Grant when he was allowed to go to the bathroom, sometimes once a day, sometimes not at all. He controlled what everyone ate. And he controlled all of the finances. Even though Angie was a pharmacist, raking in pretty good money, she had to ask for money from Aaron to buy groceries and even diapers for the kids. This whole time, Aaron is also being physically abusive, not only to Angie, but also towards his own children. Most of the information I gathered comes from freedomforgracie.com, and that's with the number four. And the timeline provided really picks up in 2008. At this time, Angie found evidence of Aaron having multiple affairs, hiring prostitutes, and also him grooming multiple underage girls on social media.
Not a good look.
We really haven't even gotten into anything, but you can just kind of
Mm-mm.
see who Aaron is.
Yeah, there's a picture already painted.
Around this time, Angie started seeing a therapist, Dr. Fortrell, just to deal with all of the stress, the abusive husband who's also cheating and grooming young girls on Facebook. The thing is, though, Aaron controlled who Angie spoke to. She couldn't even go to the hair salon alone because Aaron would be scared that she's gonna, babble to the hairstylist. So he would go and like sit in the chair next to her.
That's nuts. I mean, that's like controlling narcissism at its best.
Yes, for so he did allow her to go see the therapist, but he also had to go too, of course. And Dr. Fortrell ended up diagnosing Angie with PTSD from growing up in an abusive home. And he also diagnosed Aaron with sex addiction. Because Angie had no privacy with his therapist, she didn't end up telling him about any of the abuse. And it continued.
I mean, I'm not saying all therapists need to be this way, but I feel like I'd be able to give some signals.
Unless it's like couples therapy, I think the other person going with the other person should have been like a red flag for the therapist.
For sure. And maybe that's what it was. She wanted to go, and then he's like, oh no, we'll just do couples therapy together. In January of 2011, Aaron left his job as a morning anchor at WSMV. According to him, it was voluntary. According to Angie, he was forced to resign because they found inappropriate material on his work computer and phone. Aaron then started working in investment banking, but was quickly fired for writing fraudulent checks, which he does this again, and it doesn't make any sense because in 2012, his rich aunt dies, and Aaron is left with a multi-million dollar trust. Every month, Aaron was getting $100,000 deposited into his bank account. He has all this dough from his previous job, and Angie is also making a lot of money. He's just writing fraudulent checks because it's fun, I guess. I don't know. For some reason, he becomes more erratic and abusive the more money he gets. Angie did start seeing a new therapist, Dr. Michael Reed, and tells him all about the abuse and control. They start developing a plan to get her and the kids out of the house and away from Aaron. In January of 2013, the police got involved for the first time, getting a call to the Solomon house for a domestic disturbance. When police and EMS arrived, Aaron said Angie was mentally ill and had gotten out of hand, causing the trouble. In the EMS report, they noted that Aaron was angry, agitated, his face was red, and they just knew he was the instigator without even talking to him. EMS was dismissed, and police left without arresting anyone. And I don't know if this has any correlation or like the order of how all this happened, but that same month, Angie found out something more disturbing. Her daughter Gracie, who was 5 at the time, told her that her dad Aaron had been putting things up inside her during bath time and it hurt.
Oh my God. This is like, okay, shit human. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not making judgments about who he's going to end up being in this case that you're doing today, but that is the worst case scenario possible.
The worst.
Like that language right there and what she said and stuff is not stuff that's learned on a TV. You know, it's not something she heard from someone.
No, you 5-year-old cannot make that up.
No.
Get this. Angie confronted Aaron about it, and apparently Aaron admitted to it, all of it. But he said if Angie or Gracie told anyone, he would take the kids and Angie would never see her kids again.
Yeah, but that's not possible.
Just you wait. Shortly after this, Angie went to pick up the kids from Grace Christian Academy, accidentally leaving her phone at home. Aaron found it, and in the phone, Angie's note she had written about how to leave him. When Angie had gotten home, she found her phone in the toilet. A month later, Aaron was accused of check fraud again. Apparently, he had taken a blank check from a desk at the school, and he wrote out a check to himself for $1,100, signed it, deposited it into his own account. And the owner of the check confronted him about it in an email, saying, like, I don't owe you money. Like, I have no business relation to you. Like, what's going on? And you'll find out everyone at the school is the worst. And we'll start with headmaster Robbie Mason, who released a public statement saying the whole thing was false and that Aaron was, in fact, owed the money. Mind you, the person who the check belongs to, whose account the money came from, was adamantly denies this.
Why is that person even getting involved?
They protect Aaron every step of the way. It's so frustrating. Again, he's absolutely loaded. Like, he doesn't need $1,100. It's just
Okay, so then there's something suspicious happening between people.
very.
Yep.
Aaron's abuse also ramps up during this time. Shortly after midnight on May 9th, 2013, he tried to strangle Angie with a hairdryer cord in front of their son, Grant. Aaron does take Angie to a hospital for treatment, but tells him and Angie's parents that she tried to commit suicide. In complete shock and fear, Angie doesn't dispute this. She's also thinking if she does speak up and this goes to court, her son Grant would have to testify as a witness. Everyone is sent home, and the following day, Angie takes the kids to school and even chaperones a field trip. She's acting completely normal and not in a mental health crisis because she isn't in one. But when Angie gets home, she is met with her parents waiting for her with Aaron at the house. Together, they all force her into the psychiatric ward at the hospital, telling staff Angie was suicidal. The hospital did keep Angie overnight, but luckily for a good reason. Angie told Dr. Murphy the truth about all the abuse, being forced to check in, and he believed her. In an excerpt from the medical records, Dr. Murphy wrote the following, quote, "The patient was telling the truth about the situation and that she was in a risky situation with her husband, who appeared to possibly be volatile. The patient's parents also appeared to be unreliable sources of information," end quote. The records also state that Angie was a victim of abuse rather than of suicidal thoughts. So Angie was kept overnight for her own safety and advised on how to obtain a restraining order. The next day, when Angie went back home, the house was empty. Aaron and the kids were gone. She called him, no answer. She called his parents, no answer. Angie even called her own parents, and they did not pick up the phone.
Everyone's turning against Angie.
According to Angie, when her dad, Dan, found out about the abuse, he said, quote, I did not see that. Husbands can do whatever they want to their wives. End quote.
That's wait, that's Angie's
Oh.
dad?
Angie's dad said that to her.
Oh, we just
Wow.
have bad people in this story.
Poor girl. She has no support.
So Angie's at the house alone with zero contact from anyone. No one's answering the phone. On May 12th, which was Mother's Day, she begged Aaron to be able to see her kids. And instead, Aaron called the cops on her, telling them she was suicidal again. Police showed up at the house, determined she was, in fact, not, and went on their merry way. On the 14th, Angie went to the Nashville Police Department to file a complaint against Aaron. They seemingly take her concerns seriously at first. Like, they write a report, they're like, we're gonna look into this. And then they called Aaron, and then they dropped the complaint because he says there's no abuse, so therefore there is not any. After this, Angie was told by Aaron and her own dad that if she stopped seeking a restraining order, she could see the kids. She starts to contemplate this, but during this whole contemplation, Gracie graduated from kindergarten and Angie wasn't allowed inside because Aaron has complete control over the school staff as well. Angie then got in touch with a friend of hers who is a lawyer, and that's when she finds out that Aaron had actually filed for a divorce and an order of protection to keep Angie away from him and the kids.
Dude, so he's got everything painted that she's the bad person.
She's mentally ill, she's the abusive one, according to him. A few days after this, out of nowhere, Aaron came home with the kids, with Angie's parents in tow. And they tell her that if she behaves, Aaron and the kids will stay. The next day at 5 a.m., Aaron woke the kids up and told them to get in the car, saying they were going to go get apple fritters for their mom. They stopped and got them. And then Aaron started driving back, but in the opposite direction from their house. Grant realized this and attempted to jump out of the car. According to him, Aaron grabbed his wrist so hard he thought he had broken it. So, despite Angie complying with Aaron's demands, he moved forward with the divorce, and the two appeared in front of Judge Philip E. Smith in June of 2013. Angie's dad actually testified against her. Shocker. In the end, Judge Smith ruled against Angie, saying she was not fit to care for the kids because she was suicidal and there was no evidence of Aaron being abusive. Coincidentally, 4 months after this, Aaron's attorneys donated $1,000 to Judge Smith's election campaign, despite him running unopposed and holding zero campaign events.
What does that tell us?
One can infer a couple of things. In October of 2013, Judge Smith ordered Angie to take a mental health exam with the doctor of his choosing. Angie underwent this, and Dr. Friedman agreed with Angie and all of the psychiatrists she had seen in the past. She was a loving, caring, capable mother with zero suicidal thoughts. And when this report got back on the desk of Judge Smith, he dismissed it for no reason other than the fact that the doctor he chose did not agree with him.
This is an effed up story. Shit hasn't even happened yet.
This is just the background information. Also, mind you, this entire time from June of 2013, when the first divorce hearing was held, until February of 2014, Angie had not seen Grant or Gracie at all. When she finally did in February, she took a photo of Gracie, who had red swollen eyes and looked like she hadn't gotten zero sleep and had been crying for months. At this point, Angie was only allowed to see the kids during their sporting events. And in November of 2014, Gracie sat beside her mom during one of Grant's basketball games and told her something else. Gracie said that her dad, Aaron, was still sexually abusing her, specifically that he had been putting p soap inside of her and it hurt. Angie recorded this conversation on her phone, and it will come back up later. Christmas came and went, and this was the second Christmas in a row that Angie was not allowed to see her kids. In March of 2016, while the kids were on vacation with Aaron and his family, Angie got a surprise FaceTime call from Gracie. Gracie had snuck away to call her, showing her bruises on the inside of her thighs. Gracie didn't remember where they came from. Angie took screenshots from this call. According to Aaron, though, they were just a rash from her bathing suit. A few weeks later, Angie was arrested on Easter weekend after Aaron had a warrant issued for her failing to pay child support. Aaron is making several million dollars a year, by the way, guys.
I love that the court, like that's court process that she owed child support.
Do you know how many deadbeat dads out there that are owing child support and nothing's happening to them? After this, Aaron once again tells Angie if she behaves and doesn't tell anyone about the abuse, everything will be okay. And so for the next 3 years, Angie did everything she could to appease Aaron to keep herself and her kids safe. So all the drama and really the abuse started to come out publicly in 2018. And this is when the school and the church got involved. For background, the kids attend Grace Christian Academy, which is a part of Grace Chapel, the big church. In May of 2018, Angie had lunch with Patty Tremblay and Lori Ellsworth, fellow members of the church, and Angie opened up to them about the abuse and Aaron messaging underage girls online. Immediately, Patty and Lori call Bill Woodward to the lunch, and he's the director of campus safety at the school. So Bill leads a prayer and basically prays that Aaron drops dead, which, yeah, amen. We love Bill in the story. He's like the one good guy so far.
Okay, we love you, Belle.
So the two ladies and Bill tell Angie, hey, Headmaster Robbie Mason won't do shit for you. You need to meet with Steve Berger, the pastor. And Patty is like, hey, I'm Steve's assistant. I control his schedule. I'll put you in a meeting with him. And then Bill's like, okay, I'm also going to talk to Judge Deanna Johnson about the matter. And she's also a member of the church. So on this advice, Angie files a complaint for dependent neglect against Aaron, and the case lands in front of Judge Deanna Johnson. So like all the important people in Nashville go to the church. The judge's husband is a state senator, and the governor, Bill Lee, also attends the same church. Angie knows going through the church alone will not get her far, so she also went to Williamson County Sheriff's Office, specifically the sheriff himself, Jeff Long, who was a friend. She initially went in to tell him about Aaron grooming the girls online, thinking, okay, like there's hardcore evidence of this. If they can get Aaron on, talking to underage girls online, like that's one step, and we can deal with the abuse later. And the sheriff did find probable cause to investigate. And then 18 days later, Angie calls him up again to finally let him know about everything else that's happened. Sheriff Jeff Long assigned Lieutenant Tamika Sanders to the case after hearing everything. And Tamika Sanders scheduled a forensic interview for Grant and Gracie at a local children's advocacy center. Another fun fact, 6 months later, Governor Bill Lee appointed Sheriff Jeff Long the commissioner for the Department of Safety and Homeland Security. Thus, he is no longer the sheriff. It took a few months for this forensic interview to happen, but in the meantime, there was more drama. Only a few days after the interview was scheduled, Grant went to meet with Pastor Steve Berger. Grant told everyone that this meeting was about asking for help to get away from his dad. Pastor Steve is adamant to this day that Grant actually came to him to help him find ways to grow closer to God, and they never discussed any potential abuse. The same day, Bill Woodward, the one we love, told Grant and Gracie how to find his office in case they ever need a place to hide. A few days later, Angie emailed Kurt Beasley, an elder of the church, who was also an attorney, seeking more help. Angie explicitly stated in her email that, quote, I'm afraid for my life and that of my children, end quote. Kurt responded that there was nothing he could do. In June, Angie met with more elders of the church, once again asking for help. They prayed over her and anointed her with oil. When Angie got home from this meeting, she sent the audio recording of Gracie telling her about Aaron inserting soap into her to Lieutenant Tamika Sanders. The forensic interview finally happened on July 9th, 2018, and Tamika Sanders interviewed both Gracie and Grant in the presence of a social worker at the Child Advocacy Center. Once the interviews concluded, Tamika Sanders realized this was way more than what she originally thought, and she called DCS. DCS arrived and quickly, without questioning or looking into a single thing, not even talking to the children, told Tamika Sanders to stop investigating, and they sent the kids home.
That's, I don't even like, that doesn't even make any sense to me.
This is unreal.
There is definitely a circle of some sort happening.
Yes, there has to be, but it doesn't even make sense to me. Like,
No.
does Aaron have on all these people?
Even money, like you would think, I don't know, man. Like, let's say I was a shit person and I was down to do dirty stuff like that for money and whatnot. I don't think if it involved kids. No, first of all, let me preface this. I wouldn't do it. But if it involved kids, that's like a major line drawing situation.
Yeah, you think that would be like
No.
a hard line.
Hard line. Like multiple people in this story, too. It's not just like one person.
You got the school, the church,
Yeah.
the governor.
Yeah. That's crazy.
As we can see, Aaron can do basically anything he wants. And when the kids are sent home and are splitting time between Angie and Aaron, they are constantly running away from Aaron's house, rightfully. And every time they do, he sends two sheriff's deputies to pick them up and bring them back because he just has them on speed dial. 2 days later, the state finally does something and appoints Heather Webb as their guardian ad litem, which, if you don't know, is basically an attorney appointed to be an advocate for the child or children in court proceedings from divorce, custody, abuse, etc. Only a day later, Aaron took both Gracie and Grant on a road trip to North Carolina, where Grant was playing in a baseball tournament. They dropped Grant off, and then Aaron was like, "Oh, we have to go back to Nashville for court." Gracie is obviously confused and texts her mom all worried, like, is this true? And it was, so they headed off. But Aaron stops at a hotel in Asheville, books a room with one bed. That night, Gracie said that her own father raped her.
This is nuts.
The next day, they drove back to Nashville for the custody hearing. At the hearing, Magistrate Cable refused to watch the forensic interview Gracie gave detailing the abuse. He determined that Gracie and Grant would remain in Aaron's custody, and Aaron took Gracie back to North Carolina. On August 31st, Aaron showed up unprompted to the school to pick Gracie up early. She ran into the headmistress's office, crying, begging to not make her go. The headmistress called in the headmaster, Robbie Mason, who told Gracie the following, quote, "That's old news, Gracie. Now get in the car with your dad," end quote. In September, the family was back in court, and Magistrate Cable finally watched Gracie's video. Well, he actually only watched part of it because it was too much for him to stomach.
Oh, okay.
But instead of sending both kids back to Angie, he said only Gracie would stay with Angie, and Grant was a big boy and he could take care of himself. Like, Gracie's testimony about the abuse is so bad you can't even finish the video, but you're okay with letting him be with one of the other children?
Yeah, that's mind-blowing
If
to
it's an
me.
alternate universe, this is insane.
Every single person in here has done the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So the next 2 years is just more of this abuse, custody hearings, police being called, and the kids running away from their dad. In February of 2019, Angie filed another petition against Aaron for a dependent neglect. Judge Deanna Johnson dismissed the case, saying Angie was an abusive litigant. In doing so, she barred Angie from filing any motion against Aaron for the next 4 years until Gracie turned 18. According to Angie and Gracie, Judge Deanna Johnson had spoken to Steve Berger, the pastor, before making this decision. Little did they know, but a little over a year later, Pastor Steve Berger would be speaking at the funeral for 18-year-old Grant Solomon. On July 20th, 2020, Grant woke up early to drive an hour to Ward Performance Institute in Gallatin for pitching training with his dad. Grant actually didn't want to go. He had just gotten over COVID and he had a bad feeling. Before leaving, he told his mom, Angie, quote, "I don't want to die in Gallatin today," end quote. He did end up going, leaving in his 2015 white Toyota Tacoma. Shortly after arriving, 911 dispatchers received a call from Aaron Solomon, and this is the call.
Sumner County
I'm trying.
911, where's your emergency?
It's 1357 South Water Street. It's off 109. Please hurry.
You said 57?
Please hurry.
Okay, what's going on?
1357. My son's truck backed over him, and it's rolled over him and dragged him into the ditch, and it's on top of him. He's trapped under the truck, and somehow it drug him underneath it. Yes, my son is under it. I'm trying to call 911.
Okay, what's your name?
Oh my God. My name is Aaron Solomon.
And you said
Oh
you're
my
at
God.
1357 South Water Avenue, right?
Yes.
How old
Yes.
is the male?
He's 18. He just turned 18 a couple weeks, about a month ago. It's my son. Oh my God. Oh my God, this is not good.
Is he awake and
Oh, please
talking
hurry.
to you?
I don't know. I don't think so. He's not alert, right? No, he's out. And he's trapped. I got three guys here and he's trapped under the truck.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I understand, sir. Stay on the phone with me while we get somebody out there. What's your name?
Aaron Solomon.
All right, Aaron.
Huh?
What kind of vehicle is it?
It's a Toyota Tacoma, and it's the vehicle has to. He's underneath the vehicle.
Okay, I've got
that. And it's.
Okay, I've got that. What color is it?
It's a white truck. That's my son. It's somehow it backed up. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on with 911 right now. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Was your son working on it?
No, he was just getting out of it. We're on an incline, and I guess he didn't have it in park or something, or it wasn't engaged, or. Oh my God. Oh my God, I can't believe this.
Is still not responding?
No.
And he's still under the truck. No one can get out from under it.
We've got
units en route to you. I'm just asking you questions before we can update them, okay? Can you check and see if he's breathing?
Somebody's telling me that he's coming too.
Okay,
maybe.
He is waking up, kind of keeping still. So he is
breathing? He can't move. I don't think he can move. I don't know.
Okay,
No, he can't move. He's trapped.
Okay, we got somebody in route. Now, when he wakes up, he might be scared. Can somebody get down there and talk to him?
Yeah, somebody talk to him. Shit. There's blood. Is he facing up or down? He's facing up. They said he may aspirate. We need to hurry. Oh, my God.
So, does he have blood coming out of his mouth?
Yeah, there's blood coming out. Yeah, somehow it drug him down, I think. I don't know whether it wasn't in park or what, or if it didn't engage the brake, or it drug him underneath somehow.
Okay.
They said he's facing up.
Okay.
But he's bleeding from his mouth. So, Grant, turn your face to the side if you can, barely, but be careful.
Don't move him, okay?
We can't move him. We can't move him. Oh my God.
All right, these in there. I'm going to let you go, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Well, I have an interesting perspective on vehicles that are rolling, not in park, because last week I was quite flustered and I was running to an appointment, little appointment day. I got out of my car and I did not put it in park.
Ooh.
My car slowly rolled forward right into a little, just a little brick wall, slowly enough to do no damage to my car or the brick wall. I don't know how, take that as you will. It didn't roll backwards, it rolled forward. I guess I had it in drive though, so that might make a difference. But I mean, it wouldn't, if I would have been standing in front of my car, I don't even think it would have like hurt me. You know what I'm saying?
You would have just been standing there waiting for it to hit you.
But it wouldn't have, like, I don't think if the brick wall, like, I don't think that if your car's rolling, if you forget to put it in park, I don't know if it could actually, like, hit you, unless it's on an incline, I guess.
So it is on a bit of an incline.
Well.
No, but, like, there's a lot of things wrong with that 911 call and the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think it sounds like there's someone else in the background. I don't know who that is, but he's, like, Aaron is talking to someone else, being like, someone is telling me he's coming too, like, make sure he doesn't aspirate. They're saying to make sure he doesn't aspirate, like all this stuff. If that was my kid, personally, I'd be like right there. You know what I'm saying?
So according to Aaron, he and Grant pulled into the parking lot and parked side by side. He noticed Grant get out of his truck and go get his bat bag out of the bed of the truck. At this time, Aaron said he looked down to check a work email, and when he looked up, he saw the truck rolling backwards into the ditch. Aaron said he went down to try and get Grant out. He also said in the 911 call that three men were also trying to help. Problem is, there were no three men. The only other people at this place were two employees, Mr. Hall and Mr. Mark. Neither of them were outside. They didn't know anything was happening in the parking lot until they heard sirens in the parking lot. Like you heard, and then I won't call. It seems like Aaron's talking to other people. Like he's saying, oh, I'm like trying to call 911 while he's talking to the operator. I went back and listened to it a second time, and it sounds like you can hear other people in the background talking. So it's kind of weird to me. In the police report, they said there's no witnesses. When police and EMS and firefighters show up, there's no one else there. Aaron has no clue who these men are. I don't know who those voices were.
I thought people were there, but one thing I do want to point out that was huge to me, and like you said, Holly, too, Aaron was nowhere near the truck or his son while he was on the 911 phone call. He wasn't there. He wasn't actually anywhere near the car. He was on the opposite end of the driveway. So when they're like, oh, he's got blood coming from his mouth, he's aspirating, Aaron is saying that because someone else is telling him that, not because he's there looking at it, you know, or supposedly someone else is telling him that. If it was my kid, first of all, I'm just throwing this out there. I have been and seen and know people who've been through traumatic experiences. You're probably not going to be the one calling 911 if that's your kid. Let me just say that. That is because I couldn't fathom being on the phone trying to talk to somebody while my kid's trapped under a car dying. Like somebody else gonna be calling 911. It ain't gonna be me. I'm gonna be right next to them, you know?
Yeah, I'm gonna send three mystery strangers to go help my kid. Aaron did testify later on video and confirm that he never once went down to the ditch to help get his son, of course. And another weird thing, according to these employees, neither Aaron nor Grant had an appointment to come in that morning for training. When EMS and the fire department arrived, they were able to extract Grant out from under the truck and intubate him. Grant was transported to a local hospital and pronounced deceased at 9:28 a.m. Before Angie could even get to the hospital, Aaron filled out all the paperwork, declining a postmortem exam, legal autopsy, and organ donation.
I was trying to think when I read that Aaron had not done, he had said no to an autopsy. I was like trying to think in the back of my head, putting myself in the shoes. If Millie had died accidentally, would I do an autopsy? You know, like, or would I just let it be? And that's a tough one because if I knew it was an accident, then like, why would I do an autopsy? But I also feel like autopsies are always a good thing in general. Like, 'cause like, what if she passed away accidentally, but that I find out through the autopsy that it was because of some other type of reason, or maybe she had something that we never knew she had, and that would make a lot of sense for other things. I don't know. It's a hard case because obviously for him, he didn't want the autopsy to happen, but like, would you have done it if it was accidental to begin with anyways?
No, I get that. I see, like, okay, someone I love was like in a car accident. We know they died from the car accident. There's
Yeah,
no.
would you do an autopsy?
I mean, maybe they were suffering from like a medical emergency and caused them to crash the car, or maybe somebody was intoxicated. Like, you just, there's just
Like,
things.
what if he had a seizure and that's why he ended up in front of the car or on the ground, you know, or something like that? I don't know.
However, I think he's probably going to be able to say, well, I saw it happen. You know, I wa well, actually, in the
He
what it
can't.
sounded like in the video was he was like, I don't know what happened. So let me backtrack on that. He says he doesn't know what happened. He just found his son under the car. He's like, maybe it rolled back, maybe it blah blah blah. So if you actually don't know, yeah, I probably would do an autopsy because it sounds like he actually doesn't know. He just found his son under the truck.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would.
We're all thinking this is pretty fishy and there's more inconsistencies. So, to paint a picture of the scene, the parking lot is on a bit of a slope. There's a ditch with drainage rocks where the entrance to the parking lot goes over the ditch. On the other side of the ditch is a sidewalk and then the main road. Grant's truck is about 60 feet back from the parking spot with its front tires in the rocks and the bed of the truck on the sidewalk. So in the photos of the scene, you can clearly see that there are no tire tracks in the tall grass between the parking spot and the ditch. There are, however, tire tracks on the sidewalk, like the truck had rolled forward into the ditch instead of backwards. Grant's glasses that he also always wore were also found on the sidewalk behind the truck, further suggesting that Grant might have been on the sidewalk. According to the EMS report, Grant was, quote, underneath the front of the truck between the two front tires. However, the weight of the vehicle was supported by the wheels and was not being exerted upon the patient, end quote. So according to EMS, Grant was not being crushed underneath the truck.
He was being pinned, probably.
And I couldn't really tell, because obviously there was no photos of Grant like actually under the truck.
Right, right.
If there would have been a way to like slip him out from under it. But we just know he was not, the weight of the truck was not on him directly. The front tires were up on one side of the ditch. Rear tires were on the sidewalk. So there is a bit of a gap underneath the truck. In the hospital, medical records did note Grant's injuries. So we don't have an autopsy, but we have this. Grant did not have any abrasions or scrapes from being dragged under the truck against the asphalt and rocks. He also did not have any burns from being under the truck that had just been driven for over an hour. His shoes were in pristine condition, not a single scuff or dirt mark. What Grant did have was bruises on his upper thigh and hip, a blow to his jaw, and a single fatal blow causing a fracture to his skull. According to Angie and Gracie, Grant never kept his bat bag in the bed of his truck. He kept it in the back seat. So one, he would not be going behind the truck to get it. Second, one of Grant's bats was missing from the bag and has never been located. He didn't leave and police did not find it at the scene.
Weird, since he got smacked in the back of the head.
Makes you wonder. Another thing missing was Grant's cell phone. Mr. Hall, one of the employees, wrote in his statement that someone did find the phone in the ditch after the scene had been cleared, but he couldn't remember who it was. 24 hours later, Aaron gave Angie the phone and it was completely destroyed. So Grant doesn't have any scratches. His shoes are clean, but somehow his phone, which was probably in his pocket, was completely crushed. Makes sense. So Aaron's story hinges on the fact that the truck either malfunctioned or Grant had forgotten to put it into park. Here's the thing, though. When first responders arrived, the truck was in park. Aaron said he never went down there to the truck. He didn't put it in park once it was in the ditch. These three mystery men are nowhere to be found, and they probably did not put it in park either. So did it malfunction? Well, Aaron refused to have a forensic examination done on the truck. He also picked it up from a tow yard 48 hours after the incident, and he drove it for months. If he believed the truck malfunctioned, killed his son, why would you be driving that damn truck?
Yeah, not a little scared?
That's not, well, no, that's just not a, also, the truck killed your son. There's not a piece of, I mean, literally could not fucking imagine stepping foot, touching that vehicle again.
No. So Angie and Gracie asked for the truck, basically begged for it for months, but Aaron refused to let them have it. And then all of a sudden, the truck disappeared from his driveway. In 2021, Angie was able to track it down to a scrapyard in Nashville just hours before it was to be destroyed, and she bought it. Apparently, Aaron had taken the truck to a dealership to assess the damage. They said it was minor. So Aaron goes to an insurance adjuster, who magically wrote in his report that the truck was totaled. Just to reiterate, Aaron had been driving it for months. Angie did have a forensic exam done on the truck, and wouldn't you know it, there was no malfunction. The report conclusively stated that the accident could not have occurred as Aaron described, and there was no way the truck jumped out of park into another gear. It also did not magically jump back into park once in the ditch. Kate already knows. Listeners and Holly might be hoping this is the downfall of Aaron Solomon, but unfortunately, it is not. The Gallatin Police Department closed the case, labeling it an accident without investigating any other possible explanation.
Surprised, also not surprised.
So since Grant's death, and honestly since 2001, Angie has been begging for help and for justice. Grant's funeral was held on July 25th, 2020. Pastor Steve Berger spoke about Grant coming to him, seeking ways to grow closer to God. If you remember, Grant actually went to him for help getting away from his abusive dad. Aaron was at the funeral and showed little to no emotion the entire time. He didn't speak about how great his son was or how much he loved him. He only spoke about how good Grant was at baseball. After this, Angie hired a private investigator since repeated pushes for the Gallatin Police Department or the state police to investigate were being ignored. The whole time, Aaron and Angie are still splitting custody of Gracie. That was until September 20th, 2020, when Magistrate Cable finally granted Gracie a restraining order against her dad. And did this help any? No. Aaron would still show up at the school whenever he wanted. The school had even asked him to announce the baseball games, knowing full well about the restraining order. There's email proof that the restraining order was forwarded around school staff, stating Aaron wasn't allowed on school premises or near Gracie.
Something's wrong with this town.
They need to do, like, not like IRS, but like a mental health audit on towns sometimes.
Yeah.
Aaron was showing up to the school so often, Gracie just stopped going. Totally understandable. Would do the same.
Yeah.
And on March 24th, 2021, 14-year-old Gracie sat down and recorded a video. She decided to publish it in May. And I'll link the video on the blog post. It's 18 minutes long, but Gracie details all the abuse Aaron committed against her and Grant and how everyone has failed them. Once the video was published, the court ordered Gracie into DCS custody due to fear of psychological harm and separated her from her mother. Gracie, with the help of others, launched hashtag Freedom for Gracie, a campaign to raise awareness of all the atrocities and to raise money for Gracie to retain a lawyer. Until Gracie was 18, she was in DCS custody. She is now out, but there are GoFundMes for her ongoing legal battles and a campaign for the family to be able to afford a private investigation into Grant's death. Gracie's campaign had helped to make the public aware of everything that has happened, but unfortunately, law enforcement has zero intention on ever investigating or charging Aaron Solomon for any of the alleged crimes we discussed today. A family friend, Melanie Hicks, spoke in front of the Tennessee Supreme Court about the matter, explaining that she wrote a letter asking them to look into all of this and got no response. The Attorney General, Jonathan Scrimetti, responded that they got the letter and there is no evidence to proceed with a criminal case. Aaron also sued Angie and four of her friends over their social media posts about his alleged crimes. He sued them for defamation, false slight, invasion of privacy, negligence, intentional infliction of emotional distress, civil conspiracy, and false advertising. Luckily, the trial court and court of appeals dismissed the lawsuit. Are you guys ready for the big update that happened just weeks ago? I don't think you are. On April 11th, 2025, the Franklin Police Department arrested Angie Solomon.
What?
Is this a social experiment?
Wait till you hear why. According to the affidavit, Angie met with an undercover officer in a mall parking lot seeking out a hitman to murder Aaron Solomon. Allegedly, she offered future payment and registration to her car, saying all she wanted was for Aaron to disappear and be put underground.
So they're gonna arrest her, but not anything that Aaron did with his daughter.
Correct.
Let alone everything else.
Not a thing.
Before you said that, I was going to guess that she was arrested for child endangerment of not protecting her kids against Aaron, who they're not even going to charge. And honestly, it's kind of true.
Yeah, didn't see this one coming. Angie has been charged with solicitation to commit first degree murder, and in a court appearance 2 weeks ago, she pled not guilty. The entire conversation with this undercover officer was obviously audio recorded, and they played it in court, and Aaron was there to listen to it. Her bond was originally set to $500,000, but this has now been cut in half. And at the time of this recording, Angie has not posted the bond. And that is where the Solomon family stands today. Grant is no longer with us. Angie is in jail. Gracie is alone, and Aaron Solomon is free.
I keep thinking there has to be more to this. This is insane. This might be the most mad I've been.
Like, it has to be a fucking joke, right?
I mean, this again, this sounds like a big social experiment. Like, how much are people gonna take? This is crazy. I mean, you can't kill somebody, you can't hire to kill somebody, we all know that. But like, look at all this evidence.
Can you imagine Gracie?
The poor baby. Like, she has been fucking through it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm not condoning hiring a hitman, but I see why she thought about maybe doing it.
I mean, when the police are not helping you, when investigators aren't helping you, attorneys aren't helping you, like what do you do?
So I encourage everyone to check out freedomforgracie.com. All of the evidence, which there is a lot of, they have proof of on the website. And you can also check out all the campaigns to help Gracie. And I'll keep you guys updated on this ongoing crazy story. I'm sure there will be many, many more updates. And it just keeps coming and coming.
There better be more updates.
I feel like there's only going to be more updates about Angie.
Fucking bonkers.
Yeah, free my girl Angie.
Yeah, free Angie, dude. Like, I don't feel like there's going to be any updates about Aaron.
I guess one positive I could see coming out of this is more media and press attention on the case
Yeah, that's
because of
true.
Angie's arrest, and maybe some other things will be looked into, but one can only hope.
Jeez.
Overtime. Overtime. All I was gonna say is Holly chose her bachelorette location.
Yes, Scottsdale, Arizona. So, if any listeners out there have any recommendations of fun things to do in Scottsdale or fun bars, fun restaurants, etc., we're accepting recommendations because obviously Kate and Kylie are going. Duh.
I need to know where the best martinis are in Scottsdale.
Yeah. I
Yes.
told you guys Cameron went there for his bachelor party, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We ain't
Yeah.
trying to go. We ain't trying to golf.
We
No,
ain't fucking golfing. They went out. They went hard. Don't get me wrong. When
Oh,
I
really?
told Cameron yesterday, I was like, "Hey, guess where Holly chose her bachelorette to be?" And he goes, "Scottsdale." I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, y'all be safe and have fun." And I was like, "You can't talk, sir. You can't
Hey.
talk."
Any accused shenanigans would just come right
Mm-hmm.
back to him.
Yep.
What happens at the batch stays at the batch.
Oh, show.
Sometimes.
It'll probably end up being my first trip without the bébé.
Which I think it's about time. No
No, for
offense.
sure.
No offense to the bébé. I love the bébé.
Yeah.
Time for mom to spread her wings.
Yeah. I Cameron's birthday happened this past week on Mother's Day, and his birthday present is I bought us tickets to go see Glass Animals.
Hey.
And which is so
Oh,
I'm so excited because big fan, big fan.
yeah, I
And
went recently and they're so good.
okay. And then we're going the concerts at down in Hollywood at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. So I got us a night there as well. So that's gonna be my first night away from like the baby. And it's just the two of us and both excited. But Cameron was more excited for the fact that the baby wasn't coming along.
Now, are you going to partay?
At Hollywood. My only issue is that this is, and I haven't told Cameron this, the concert doesn't start till 8 p.m. Who the hell, like, what am I, 18? Like, you think I'm gonna, that means it's not gonna be over. You know, that means they're not gonna be on stage till 9. We're probably
If
not gonna be
you're,
done till like 11 or midnight, God forbid.
yeah, you're gonna start marathon training for a
I
concert.
know. I know. I actually was thinking about looking up pre-workout to take, but maybe before the concert. Y'all know I'm a 7 to 8
Yeah.
p.m. I can't. So I'm worried that if I mix alcohol with an 8 or 9 p.m. show, then I'm not gonna make it. So I might
Let's
have to
be
do the
real. With glass
pre-workout.
animals, I feel like the vibe is more like, you know.
Yeah, well, I wasn't gonna say that
Oh, okay.
on microphone. Yeah.
I didn't say
Yeah. But
it.
just know I might mix that with pre-workout.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't mix pre-workout with alcohol. Your heart might explode.
Yeah. I mean, you could do like a vodka Red Bull.
Feel like I'm prepping for Holly's bachelorette because
Yeah, get
I'm
some practice
going.
in.
Yep, I'm going to it. I'm gonna be baby free. I'm gonna have fun, and I need to be able to stay out past 8 p.m.
Yeah, for
Yes.
sure. Dinner's like at 8. Just kidding, but.
Also, there's going to be a time change, Kate. So 8 p.m. in Scottsdale is like what, 10, 11 p.m. our time?
Oh God. I'm gonna have to pre I'm gonna have to train.
Yeah, you should start training now.
Kate's gonna have to go 2 weeks in advance to like acclimate.
Okay, starting now, I'm gonna stay up 10 minutes later every day.
There you
That's a good
go.
goal. I feel like
Yeah,
that's a
that
pretty good
is.
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Kylie, can you tell us why we don't even need doctors, question mark?
As people know, my sister recently gave birth. And I was there for at the hospital for like 48 hours straight. When did I see the doctor? The last like 2 minutes of labor. And then it was gone. The nurses did everything. Didn't see the doctors the entire time.
They only come for the actual end of the pushing, delivery, or the C-section.
Which was a surprise to me, because every doctor show I've seen, you know, the OB or whatever is in there the whole time, all buddy-buddy with.
I was thinking we were leaning more towards a conversation of, like, AI and ChatGPT replacing doctors and lawyers. And
Holly wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I have seen TikTok videos of people going to, like, urgent care and stuff and seeing the doctor Googling or ChatGPT and medical stuff.
Which is crazy.
It is crazy, but then I remember, as a lawyer, I do have to Google the law sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. Same. I was about to say, catch me ChatGPTing. I don't know. To be honest, and I know this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, and Kate's going to be like, what? I trust ChatGPT, maybe with my life.
You are?
More than I would, more than a doctor. There's not a, okay, maybe not ChatGPT, but, like, if there was no margin of error for, like, a machine, and you put your symptoms in, and they told you, like, what it could be that you're sick with, I don't know. Like,
you are crazy. ChatGPT is killing our planet.
I know, you're right.
I'm not a ChatGPT hater, but it pisses me off when people use it for things that could be, like, Googled. Like, they type in and they're like, what's the best, like, restaurant in my town?
But like, it's basically Google. It's Google, but it's searching everything. And
can
it's,
you imagine saying, having ChatGPT in college or high school these days?
Yeah, it would be amazing.
This is what's good. It's going to ruin the world, Holly, because no one's going to be able to do any. First of all, it's going to take away workers, and, like, people are not going to have to do their job. Same with AI.
You're right.
But
for selfish reasons, I'm like, dang, you know?
Holly, I'm going to start just only responding to you via ChatGPT.
Oh, do you want to hear a fun tech fact I found out today? So, like, voice memos, when you send, like, a voice text with your iPhone, if you say Dave and Buster's in your voice memo, it won't go through.
Why?
Did you try it?
Mm-hmm. The government is censoring Dave and Buster's.
Shut the hell up. Why?
Yeah, what is going on at the Dave and Buster's that we can't know about?
What's wrong with Dave and Buster?
I think they're good people.
You want me to ask ChatGPT?
Yeah.
Oh,
see what ChatGPT has to say about Dave and Buster.
In the meantime, as I ChatGPT this, another fact that I tech fact that I learned recently is ChatGPT is spending millions on answering people, millions of dollars on answering people saying, telling it thank you and please, which I do. Because it's one of my employees, you know, I'm not going to be disrespectful.
You say thank you to ChatGPT?
Yes, I do. No, not every time. Sometimes I catch myself saying please before I type something in, and then I'm like, wait, what the fuck am I doing, you know?
Like, but I get please that. Tell me this, instead of just being like, tell me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I get that, because if it ever becomes, like, sentient, you want it to be on your good side.
Exactly. And it's just good manners. I mean, I don't want to hurt its feelings. It does so much good work. I feel like
ChatGPT is Holly's little Tamagotchi.
I want you to read exactly what it says, too.
Okay. It says, the issue you're experiencing with Apple voice memos censoring Dave and Buster stems from a bug in Apple's transcript system, not intentional censorship. This bug affects audio messages sent via the message app on iPhones running iOS 18.1 and later. So update your iPhone. When you see an audio message mentioning Dave and Buster's, the message appears to send from your device, but the reciprocant only sees the typing indicator 3 dots before the messages disappear. The issue also affects other brand names containing ampersands, such as H&M and Tiffany & Co.
All right, so ChatGPT is in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you lying to me?
Ask ChatGPT if it's lying to you.
Are you lying to me?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not lying. The issue with Apple voice memos censoring or failing to deliver recordings that mention Dave and Buster's is a documented bug. It relates to how Apple's transcription engine processes in certain brand names. When it transcribes something like Dave and Buster's as Dave and Buster's, the ampersand, I don't know how to say that, can cause the message to slightly fail. This has been confirmed by credible sources and independent developers. It is not intentional censorship or a transcription bug. Well, that's not really the answer I wanted. I wanted it to say, no, I am unable to lie. You know?
Yep.
I'm gonna say, are you allowed to lie to me? But if it says no, I'm not lying, how do I know if it's lying?
Can't trust it.
I would love for a bug to happen one day with ChatGPT, and then everybody that uses it in the world for that day gets the wrong info, and then you know people were using ChatGPT.
Don't you put that on me. No, I'm not allowed to lie to you. My purpose is to avoid it. My purpose is to provide accurate, honest, and helpful information based on the best available evidence. If I ever give incorrect information, it's not intentional. It may be due to outdated data or error in interpretation. You can always ask for sources or clarification.
Okay.
Confirmation I needed in this relationship.
Makes you feel better.
Yeah.
You can sleep tonight.
Ew, I'm going to go try and figure out how to dismantle the ChatGPT network.
And I'm gonna go talk to ChatGPT.
And with that, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. We'll see you next week with another case. Of course, leave a review, like, subscribe. You can leave comments now on Spotify, which have been very interesting to read.
I
I
love
didn't.
reading those.
We've had a couple weird ones. If you send us some weird ones, you might get a shout out. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.